Possible in part by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois. Programs on WILL are made possible with support from Sinfonia da Camera, presenting String Serenade with the Pacifica Quartet on Saturday, October 30th at 7:30 p.m. in the Fullinger Great Hall of the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. The performance will include works by Bridge, Elgar, Dvorak, and Vaughan Williams. For more information, call 333-6280.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. Well, you know when it's time to listen to AM 580, when world events unfold and you want to know how they affect you, when political races heat up, or when we do computers and you here on the Afternoon Magazine. You know when to listen and you know when it's time to support WILL, and it is time to do that very thing. Jack Brighton, our Director of Internet Services at WILL, is with me in the studio this afternoon. Hi, Jack.
Hi, Celeste. I love the show that you do with Greg Klein and sometimes Peter Kimball as the guest to the Computers and You, because it's such a difficult thing for all of us to deal with our computers. Let's face it, there's all kinds of things that can go wrong, and they're so imperfect. So I listen to the show religiously, if that's the word. So it's something that I think that a lot of people, you know, listen to, and you should support this because it's something that you really just can't get anywhere. The pledge line right now, you can call it 217-244-9455. Let me just say a couple more things about the internet services that we were offering here on our website, will.uiuc.edu. I think we've come a long way. I know we have a lot longer way to go to make it as it could be in terms of service to people. And, you know, we recognize that not everybody even uses the internet, but increasing numbers do. And we think it's an important thing certainly now and will be more important in the future. So we put all our shows, all the audio archives are on our website. So if you missed this show, you heard part of it, you want to go back and listen to an answer that you heard part of and you want to get the whole thing, you can go back to our website and listen to any back 2, 3, sometimes 4, 5 years. And they're all there in real audio format. And something we started doing earlier this year is offering MP3 downloads. So you can actually download it onto your iPod or whatever device you want and listen to it while you're jogging or wherever you like. And so, you know, it's a feature that we wanted to provide for folks. Originally, when we started doing this, many people suggested that we ought to charge because it costs us money. Mm-hmm. It costs us money to do this. People said, well, you ought to charge, you know, somebody to get an archive of a show. Just, you know, ask it for a buck, you know, every time they download something. And my feeling was, no, we're not going to do that because what that does is exclude people who can't afford to pay for it, you know. And I don't want to do that. I think that what we're doing is The public domain is what we're all about. We are about getting information to people who need it. Citizens, whether it's election information or whether it's issues on healthcare, the environment, science, education, whatever topics we're covering, we feel that people have a right to that information because this is public broadcasting. And so our web operation is also a public web operation. So, you know, and what that means is we're not going to charge you when you go to the website, but we do hope that you will contribute to the website just as you do to the radio and television station here. And again, the pledge line right now, you can call it 217-244-9455. If it's something that you use, we hope you will do that. And on the web, WILL.UIUC.EDU. You can pledge right on our website, too.
Okay. Let's check in with Maeve Riley in Pledge Central. Maeve is the editor of our program guide, Patterns, which is a program guide for WILL, AM, FM, and television. Maeve, what is the goal today? Where do we stand at the moment?
Well, the goal is $90,000 by the end of the day. And John Dunkelberger is right in now doing an update. But our goal, we've been at about $83,523, and I expect that to go up by at least $1,000 by the time John gets the update done. So
very good.
We're getting closer to the goal, and you can do it by making a call, 217-244-9455, or go to the website, will.uiuc.edu.
And this is a voluntary organization, Maeve, the Friends of WILL. So people, they volunteer their support, and people like John come in and volunteer their time to answer the phones. But also, when you call in to make a pledge of support, it's your decision as to what kind of contribution you're going to make. Would you run down for us some suggested?
Right. The basic membership level is $40, and that's a year-long thing. That's just $40 for a year of great programming here on
WYLF.
That's
11 cents a day,
yeah.
Really.
And that entitles you to Patterns, our program guide, as well as, you know, you're helping support the great programming here on WYLF AM. Another level people like is the $75 level, which is what we call the member card level. And that entitles you to a member card, which gives you 2-for-1 dining at a lot of local restaurants and some free admissions to area attractions. You actually make your money back in a year on that one. So that's the member card level at $75. Go to the phone, 217-244-9455.
Thanks, and we'll check back with Jack and Maeve later in this hour. This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Today on the program, it's Computers in You. We welcome back to the program science and technology reporter for the News Gazette, Greg Klein. Greg Klein writes two columns for the newspaper about computing. They run on Mondays in the circuit section of the paper. One, a question and answer column. The other, a column featuring interesting websites. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with your questions. Here are the telephone numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Greg, welcome back.
Thanks, Celeste. It's good to be here.
Good to see you. Let's talk a little bit about Google here to start before we talk with our first listener here this afternoon. Google, of course, is a tool for searching the web, but now it's more. It's a tool for searching the files on your PC.
Google is getting into all kinds of interesting things. and one of those things is now you can and it's still this piece of software is still in what we call beta form, which means it's not – Google doesn't consider it a finished product, but it's pretty finished, and it's put it out there for people to try out. And you can go to their website at desktop.google.com, and you can download a piece of software that will it's Google not only for the web but also for your computer. Once you install it, and this will work only on fairly up to date Windows machines. They haven't expanded it to the Macintosh operating system or Linux at this point. It will look at your hard drive, and it'll index things like your email and your instant messaging conversations, as well as other kinds of documents, you know, Word documents and WordPad documents, text-type documents. It'll index the titles of all kinds of other files on your computer. And then when you want to find something, you don't have to go clicking through a bunch of folders to remember where you put it. Mm-hmm. You simply do a Google search of your hard drive. Google likes to call it the photographic memory for your computer. And it's an interesting concept. You know, search, because of the size of the hard drives we have now and all the things we're keeping on them, search is becoming a big topic of conversation and issue in personal computing. And in fact, both Apple and its OS X Tiger operating system that it's supposed to release next year, and Microsoft in the next iteration of Windows, whenever that comes out, probably 2006 at this point, they're supposed to include a search capability. And this will be a lot different, theoretically, than the Find you have now in Windows or in the Macintosh operating system. It's supposed to be a lot faster. It's supposed to be a lot easier to use, a lot more a natural part of the operating system instead of calling up a separate program. It's something that's always there. You want to find something, you type words in to look for it, and it looks for it for you and comes up with a list.
Very interesting. Well, it'll be interesting to see if Google corners this idea before the, you know, time when Microsoft and Apple improve their Find.
Well, they're the guys that know about search.
Right.
So I'm wondering whether they really won't make an inroad here. And I think that's probably, from a business perspective, part of the intention. You know, they're doing a couple of other interesting things. One is if you have a cell phone or another kind of mobile device that's capable of text messaging, simple text messaging, you can now send Google a message, a text message. If you want to find somebody's address and phone number, you could send their name or the location of a restaurant and the area that you're currently in. You can send them the name of that restaurant and its town, and it'll send you back an address and a phone number. You can send it math questions if you want to add two and two or do something like convert 100 kilometers to miles. You could send it a text message. If you want to define a word, you want to know what jocularity means or something like that, you could send a defined jocularity. And then Google will actually send you back a text message generally with the answer to your question. And I've been kind of playing with that and found it to work pretty well. That's at www.google.com/SMS. And then the other thing is, they've started their email service, Gmail, which again is in the testing phase at this point. And in fact, to sign up for it, somebody has to invite you to sign up for it. All those invitations are becoming increasingly easy to get. And again, it's an interesting thing because it incorporates the power that Google has in search. So, you've got all this email that you're accumulating and you can't remember where that, message Aunt Millie or someone else sent you months ago is today. And you can use, essentially a Google search to find it. Moreover, it's a web-based email client, so your email is always available to you at any computer you can sit down and access the web on. And they give you a gigabyte of storage space. Wow. Now, how someone is going to fill a gigabyte with email, text-based email, basically, I don't know. But essentially, you can leave all the email you get up there to be accessible to you anywhere you can sit down at a web-based computer.
Let's talk with a listener. Now we're going to talk with a caller on the toll-free line. Where are you calling from this afternoon? Line 4, hi.
Line 4, yeah. This is, I'm from Chicago.
Okay.
And I, not surprisingly, seem to do better with Winamp rather than Real Player. For programs on the internet, as I will listen to you on the internet. Somehow or another, Real Player seems to be my default. I did that because some of the things that I listen to only work with Real Player, apparently. But when I want to go to Winamp, it still defaults to Real Player, even though I use Mozilla, and it gives me an option to either go to the default or ask for Winamp. And it don't seem to be able to force it to go to Winamp. Any suggestions on that?
So for this kind of file type that you're trying to listen to, some kind of streaming media.
Streaming,
right?
Yeah, streaming audio.
You have, and you're using Mozilla.
Yes.
You have the default application set to Real Player, right?
Correct.
But instead you want to open it with Winamp. In some instances.
Yes.
Now, do you get a file that comes down before the stream starts?
Yes. It gives you a download, a download dialog box.
Uh-huh.
And as a choice, use the default, which is Real Player, or open it with something else. And when I indicate Winamp, it still goes to Real Player.
That's a good question. What I was going to suggest was, do you get any kind of a little file? When you play something with Real Player, you'll get a little Real file, right?
Yes.
That sits there on your computer.
Correct.
You tried right-clicking on that and using the Open With selection in the menu there?
Okay.
And then selecting Winamp?
Right. Let's see. I was going to try to do it as we speak. I don't know if you have time to do that, but
that's something that I
I'll try that.
That's something I would give a try.
Okay.
Now the other thing I wonder about is, does it default back to Real Player because these are files that Winamp can't open?
I wouldn't think so. I mean, for example, okay, Air America Radio.
Uh-huh.
Since we lost our outlet in Chicago, I listen to it streaming. And it gives me a choice. Listen with Real One Player,
uh-huh.
or listen with Windows Media Player.
Uh-huh.
I click on Windows Media Player, and it opens it in Real Player.
And it still opens it in Real Player.
Yeah. Even though they've given me a choice.
Mm-hmm. Now I'm suspecting that Real Player has inundated itself.
Which is one of the reasons why I hate it.
Yeah,
it seems to take over your computer.
Yeah, and I undoubtedly there must be a way around that. I bet it's a complicated way, I'd need to look that up.
Right. Well, but thank you very much.
Give the try clicking on the right clicking on the file and doing it in the open with procedure and see if that does anything for you.
Right. Thank you so much.
Thanks for the call. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. This is our Computers and You discussion today on the Afternoon Magazine. Greg Klein is with us. We have another listener waiting to talk with us on line one. Good afternoon.
Yeah, I just have a couple of things I'm curious about. Number one, my local internet provider is down today, and I called them up. And they have a recording saying there's been a criminal attack on their system, and they're working on it with the police. And my email is web-based, and I'm wondering if there's any likelihood that there's any effect on my machine if my internet provider has been attacked and I can't get into my email. And then I have another question about, you know, the police are working with the internet provider, but do you know anything about the relationship after the Patriot Act and before that with, you know, how the FBI and the government work with internet providers and, you know, things like, I don't know if they still use the word magic lantern. That was the word that was used maybe two or three years ago. I'm just curious. What do you know about those things?
Well, let's say the first thing first. There shouldn't be any effect on your computer personally at this point from an attack on your internet provider, particularly if you use a web-based email service, you're not constantly hooked up there. I take it.
No.
No, it shouldn't affect your computer. And I'm not sure what you're asking in the second.
I'm just curious. You know, like on the one hand, of course, the police are working with the internet provider if they feel they've been attacked by criminals. But
right.
I'm also wondering, how much do internet providers know about whether the government is actually in some ways looking into their files or your files? Or I'm just curious how that works, if you know anything. Or maybe it's like librarians. Librarians can't tell anyone that they know that the government is checking on someone's taking out of books. So I'm just curious if you know whether people who work for internet providers are aware of, you know, government surveillance of computers. I'm just curious.
No, I don't know.
Okay.
not enough to probably tell you anything that you don't already know about it. I'm sure that they know in some cases. I mean, there's evidence when anybody's trying to probe your computer in some cases. And I'm also sure, not to be, you know, paranoid about it, but I'm also sure that the government has ways of looking at that stuff without all that many people knowing about it.
Okay.
And, you know, there is an ongoing court battle about just how much internet providers are expected to give up when the government wants to know about their
Is that connected
clients.
At all with the library?
Well, it's more connected with file sharing of copyrighted material.
Okay. Well, it's an interesting topic.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Next, we talk with a listener on line two. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I have a question concerning spyware, and I've recently been trying to rid my PC running Windows XP of all the spyware I could find on it using a program SpyBot that I downloaded free off the web. And I feel like I've had really good success with it. When I first ran it, I had like 53 programs causing me trouble, and I've cleaned it down to 3, but SpyBot, every time I run it, says it finds these 3 and it gets rid of them. And if I run it again immediately, I've still got those 3. Any ideas? Should I try a different search and destroy program or any other suggestions for how to get rid of those last 3?
Right. So I'll say 2 things to you.
Okay.
Now, do you know that that over on the as you're facing the screen with SpyBot, okay, over on the right side, there's kind of a gray button.
You know, I'm
on
not
the side.
At now, its help program says that, but I don't see any gray button when I look over.
Well, it's not really a button. It's not really a button. It looks like more of a like a gray bar on the side of the window.
Okay.
You
okay.
look at that and see if you see it. It's a gray bar with kind of a couple of little arrowheads on it. It doesn't really look like a button. I know that's confusing. It confused me the first time I used it, too.
Okay, but I'll try again. I'll look again very closely.
If you see it and you click it, that'll usually give you some information about what those things are.
Okay.
Now, SpyBot, as well as other spyware and adware cleanup programs, you know, they'll identify things that are part of the Windows operating system, okay? Let me give you an example. I ran a and the other thing I'd suggest you download is a free version of AdAware and use that both that and SpyBot because you're right, sometimes one catches stuff that the other doesn't. It's not a spyware experts that I know some here in town tell me it's always a good idea to have both of those. They're both free, so, you know, what the heck.
So AdAware is the name of it?
AdAware, yeah.
Okay.
AdAware SC is what you're looking for. That's the free version. But I was running a scan with AdAware this morning on my machine, and it came up with half a dozen things that it flagged. Okay. Right. Well, these were all things that Windows does.
Legitimately.
That could be they're legitimate things, but you know they could be used by someone for nefarious purposes. For example, one of the things was the tracking of the list that tracks the programs I've used most recently,
right?
Or the list of my recent downloads. These are, you know, little log files that Windows has that keeps, and you know somebody could get a hold of those and use them to see what I'm doing on my computer and that kind of thing.
Right.
So AdAware flags them. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
They're not really a problem.
Right.
But it made me aware of them in case I'm super cautious and want to get rid of those as well. You know. Now, some of those things you'd get rid of them, and what would happen? You know, Windows would just recreate it. You know, because that's what it does. Yeah. So that's probably the kind of thing you're seeing.
Oh,
I would imagine.
It's entirely possible that these things I'm looking at aren't actually a problem, and
right.
They're
things that could be problem. But generally, they're just Windows functions, and unless somebody, you know, probes them and uses them, it's not something somebody has put on your computer for the express purpose of doing nasty things.
Well, I appreciate your input. Thank you very much.
All right.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Other questions are invited for Greg Klein of the News Gazette, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Another caller on line one. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. A couple questions. First is, what's the reason and suggested frequency to scan and defrag floppy disk and the C drive?
Okay. Floppy disks, I don't know that you get any benefit out of defragmenting floppy disks.
Oh, okay.
Scanning them is, you know, not a terrible idea if you want to make sure they're okay, but you know, that's up to you. The reason for scanning your hard drive and defragmenting your hard drive, scanning your hard drive looks for problems in the structure of the hard drive, right? So and it does things like, you know, sometimes hard drives are divided up into little spaces where they put pieces of files, right? And sometimes those little spaces go bad. So when you scan, one of the things it's done is it looks for those bad spaces, and it puts a marker on them so that they're not used because, you know, you don't want data being written onto bad spaces, right?
Okay.
And sometimes there are a certain amount of those bad spaces on a hard drive, not so many that makes the drive, well, it can eventually, but not so many that it makes the drive useless, but, you know, that it could be problems if you're writing data to it.
Gotcha.
So it does things like that. It looks for problems on your hard drive.
Okay.
Now, defragmenting, it goes back to what I said about how information is stored on your hard drive. It's broken up into all these little spaces.
Mm-hmm.
You want to write a file. You want to save a Word document to your hard drive. Depending on what it is, it's probably too big to fit into one of those little spaces, right? So what your computer does is it divides that file up into pieces, and it puts those pieces into spaces. It sizes the pieces for those spaces. Then when you want to see that file, it just reassembles those pieces.
Okay. Okay.
And you get it up on your screen. Now, this usually happens, you know, so quickly and so seamlessly that you don't even know what's going on, obviously, right? But over time, a condition can occur that's called fragmentation, where these pieces are so spread out over your hard drive that it's taken a lot more work to locate all those pieces and put them all together.
Okay.
And if it's bad, you know, if you've got a really high level of defragmentation or a high level of fragmentation, it can A, slow your computer down a lot, make it sluggish, and B, it can eventually cause you, you know, problems, errors, and things like that. So what defragmenting does is it reorganizes those pieces to put, pieces of this file in close proximity or as close as proximity as it can to each other. So you're getting that easy reassembly process again.
Okay.
Now, for most people, it's a good idea, I think, to scan your disk, to run ScanDisk at least monthly, and to look for problems. Defragmentation, you can probably do it every 6 months or every year.
Oh, really?
And not really have to worry about it at the level most people are using their hard drives.
Okay. So you're saying scan it 30 days and defragment yearly? What'd you say?
Yeah. Yeah. I'd scan your hard drive for problems every month.
Okay.
That's not a bad idea, but I really don't think most people need to defragment more than, you know, twice a year or once a year or something like that.
Okay. Okay. Excellent. And now, when I go for my Microsoft updates, it'll have a little block. It'll say downloading, and it gives a time, and it does it. And then it'll say installation, and then it goes to that and does that. But what is it? What's happening when it's downloading and then installation? I just thought it would be happening all the time, all along, you know, both at the same time. But
well, when it's downloading, it's bringing the file down, the software that it's going to install. And then when it's installing it, it's probably offline, and it's just finishing the installation process. It's writing it to your disk.
Oh, okay. So that's downloading is kind of like in their internal, like Microsoft's internal thing, getting the information that's
right
going to go on my computer.
Just think of it. I don't know what other kinds of software you download besides Windows Update, but let's say you went on there and you decided to download the web browser Firefox or something like that.
Yeah.
Well, you'd download a file. You know, you'd get a file, right, that said Firefox. And then you'd click on that file, double-click on it, to open it up and install it, to run the installer. So that's all you're seeing in that process.
Oh, okay. Okay, excellent. Now I'm having some problems with my email being transmitted, and I don't know why that it just happened, you know, starting last week, and I'm connected with the U of I server.
Uh-huh.
And I've tried to retransmit. I've talked to sites, and they said, well, why don't you click on the when you... you know, click on the message itself and then click on send, and nothing's working. And I just wonder if you could suggest what is happening and what corrective action could be done.
That's kind of too ubiquitous a question for me to answer exactly. I'd follow the procedures they tell you, for one thing, sites. But what email client do you use?
Outlook Express.
Outlook Express, and it just doesn't send?
That's right, yeah.
And what kind of message do you...
I've got several messages in my outbox.
That haven't gone?
That haven't gone. No, others have.
Right. And what's it tell you?
Well...
What message do you get?
Well, I don't get any message except... Well, I don't get any... I'm disconnected from the server. But when I, like, click on the send button, it'll have, a bunch of codes. I don't POP3 and all this kind of stuff. I don't understand all the code. And
mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's not in English. It doesn't tell me what the problem is for the
right.
layman, anyway.
Right. But it would be good for you to do is next time you get that, write it down.
Okay.
And then, when you talk to the guys at sites. Tell them what it said, because they can probably interpret that for you. Or, you know, call back here in a couple months, and I'll try and interpret it for you.
Okay.
Or send me
an
email.
Send it to the paper.
My email is Klein, KLINE, @news-gazette.com. And if you'll write down that error message and send it to me, I'll look for an answer for you and put it in my column.
Okay, wonderful. Wonderful.
Okay.
Good,
okay.
Good, good.
Thanks for the call. Let's go on to another listener on the toll-free line, line four. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I have an emergency room problem. Yesterday evening, my computer decided to shut down, and it will not start up.
Uh-huh.
And the thing which I had been having the little pop-up on over the past week or so was that my disk was, memory was low.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I had talked to a couple of people that, you know, locally that seemed to have some knowledge about computers. And they suggested this, a CD burner, you know, and transfer files.
Mm-hmm. Clear space on your hard drive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the thing is, now I'm faced with a much more serious problem, and I'm wondering what should I do in order. I called Verizon as my carrier,
mm-hmm.
and I talked with them, and they said I had to get a hold of Hewlett-Packard.
Well, yeah, they're not. They're your internet provider. They're not going to help you
right,
with
yeah.
a problem with your hardware there. Now, so the message you were getting was about your hard drive being full.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Was it full?
I went and defragged and, you know, to see if space could be.
Right.
And also I eliminated a music thing, which I never used.
Mm-hmm. To clear space.
And yet at the same time, I didn't free up hardly anything.
Right. Did you check at all to see how full it was?
It said something like 45.
I'm not sure how big it is. Do you know how big it is?
No, this is one of the things that I'm not very competent
okay.
in knowing these things.
Now, when you now your computer won't come on at all.
No.
And when you try to turn it on, what happens?
It doesn't do anything. It just there's no light.
No lights. No nothing.
Yeah, I've you know the little box. You know what is that Westaf or whatever that you have with you know your provider.
Mm-hmm.
The lights are still on there.
Yeah, that's just your cable mode or your
right,
DSL
yeah.
mode and whatever DSL if you've got
but
Verizon.
There is no activity at all when I press
well,
the button.
See, what I'm going to tell you is I'm going to say two things to you, and don't be insulted by the first thing because this has happened to me before. Okay, one is make sure it's plugged in. Okay.
Yes,
I've plugged into your computer, right? And the second thing is you may have a problem that has occurred just in conjunction with the fact that your hard drive was getting full, but they're not related, okay? And it sounds to me, if you're getting nothing, it sounds to me like either your computer's unplugged or your power supply has gone bad.
The power supply is gone?
It has gone bad.
Yeah.
You know, if you're getting no juice at all, That'd be something to have looked at, I think. See if the power supply is still working.
Dismantle it and take it in and have it checked out.
Well, yeah, you probably want to have somebody look at it.
Yeah.
You don't sound like that's something you'd want to do yourself.
No, I wouldn't know how.
Yeah, but if you're seeing no lights, nothing in the computer.
Yeah. In the stack, you know.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
In the machine. The CP, yeah. the box.
The tower.
Yeah.
Whatever they call them.
Yeah. If you're seeing no evidence of power there, it would seem to me that it's either unplugged or the power supply has gone bad.
Well, it just very quietly, I was, you know, reading one of the internet news sources,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden screen just went black.
Yeah, now you get no power whatsoever.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I'd make sure it's plugged in both in the wall and in the computer. Remember,
yeah.
there's a plug in the back of the computer, too,
right.
where that
yeah.
Power cable plugs in. And then if that didn't work, I'd have somebody look at it internally and check the power supply in particular.
Okay. So.
And I think it's, you know, it may be related, but it's quite possibly unrelated to your full hard drive situation.
Well, I was thinking that possibly because the hard drive, you know, might be overloaded, that might cause it. I didn't.
Well, no, that even if your hard drive is full, that shouldn't cause the power supply to go down. But the power supply may have gone down on its own.
Okay, so basically, find someone who is competent in checking these things out, and have them take a look at it.
And unless you're comfortable opening it up and looking at the power supply yourself.
No, we won't even talk about that.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, good luck.
Thank you.
Okay, next we're going to talk with a listener on line two. Hi.
Hi. I've just recently started doing online banking, and I also now have a PayPal account. And I was wanting to know what I should be doing in addition to SpyBot. I guess I just learned I should maybe also be using this Adware SC. But what precautions might you suggest to try to keep your username and password from not getting lost in cyberspace?
Your username and so you're concerned about the username and password of your online banking account and your PayPal account.
Yeah, well, I mean, at the computer at home, I would log in and and now of course I have a wireless router. It says it's encrypted, and I guess the bank is doing everything it can, and PayPal is.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess from what I understand, that you have to watch for spyware that might count keystrokes.
Right.
And so I'm using SpyBot. I didn't know about this other program, Adware.
Yeah, I'd get you want an up-to-date antivirus program, okay?
Yeah.
So you want an antivirus program. You want to make sure that you keep the definitions up to date, and that you have it set so that it's monitoring the activity on your computer. Okay.
Okay.
B, do you have a what kind of an internet connection do you have?
It's a wireless.
Is it through a DSL or cable or?
I think it's wireless all the way. It's through this Volo.
Oh, Volo. Yeah. Okay, good. Then you probably also want a firewall, okay?
Well, I was wondering about that because it says there's a firewall in the router, but do I need more than that, a software sign?
No, that should be fine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. And now that you say that, I remember they do have a firewall in their router. The router you have at your home, right?
Yes,
yeah.
Right.
So it sits between your computer and the outside world.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good. You've got SpyBot. It probably wouldn't be a bad idea to get another one like Adware SC. And there are options other than that, but I just mentioned those two because they're both free. And run those periodically.
And how do you spell that Adware? Is that Adware?
Yeah. No, it's Adware. Let me, I can probably quickly find the website for you here.
The firewalls that are within routers, is there anything you have to do to activate that, or how does that work? Because I know that somewhere I kind of remember reading that people don't activate their system, their wireless system, so that it is secure.
That's another matter.
Okay.
Generally, in a if you go to Best Buy and you buy or Circuit City or some other Radio Shack or Simplified Computers or whatever, and you buy a router and it's got a firewall in it, that'll generally be active when you install and turn it on. Now, almost all of those pieces of apparatus have a web-based interface where you, and you'll get this with your router, you put an address in your browser, and it actually goes into your router and allows you to set it up. It's got various configuration options there. So you can, do that, go in, look at the configuration options, make sure the firewall's on, and if it's not, turn it on. I think what you were talking about, Celeste, is if you have a wireless access point at home where you can walk around your house with your wireless laptop and get on the internet, what a lot of people, a lot of those come and they don't have encryption turned on. There's a form of encryption. It's called WEP for short, which puts those things that are flying around your house, that data that's flying around your house through the air, it puts it in encrypted form so nobody can just grab it, and do whatever they want with it.
Drive by.
Right.
Of thing.
So a lot of times that's off by default because there's a little bit of work you have to do to get computers and access points to recognize each other when you've got that encryption going. So that's something for people if they're in an exposed situation to be aware of, and they may want to work at turning those on. If you go to Lava Soft USA, lava like out of a volcano, Soft USA, and that's all one word, .com. Okay?
Mm-hmm. LavaSoftUSA.com.
Right. That's where you'll find ad-aware.
Oh, ad-aware.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Make sure it's ad-aware and make sure you get it at LavaSoft because, as we've talked about before in the show, there are some fakes out there, you know, that pass themselves off as something like AdAware or something like SpyBot, and they're actually purveyors of adware and spyware.
Okay,
so,
yeah. When you
so
said,
be
I
sure
thought,
to get the right thing.
Yeah, okay. It's ad-aware.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And that's the SC, is that also?
SE.
SC.
Yeah,
E
as in Edward, yeah.
Okay, SC, very good. Okay,
That's the free version. They have a paid version, too. But if you run that in SpyBot, I like to do it at least weekly and sometimes more, but, you know, I'm a little obsessive. So, yeah. So if you run those, you should be protected.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. And that's where we're going to wrap things up this afternoon. I want to thank Greg Klein so much for joining us this afternoon to talk with our listener. Greg will be back in December, I think, right?
Yes.
Wow.
Yep.
How about that? The year winds down.
Yes.
Greg Klein. Yeah, Greg Klein, science and technology reporter for the News Gazette. Greg, you want to give your email again so if folks want to email you a question in the meantime.
All right. That's Klein, K-L-I-N-E, at news-gazette.com.
Okay. Greg writes two columns for the newspaper about computing. They run on Mondays in the circuit section of the paper. One is a question and answer column. The other a column featuring interesting websites. See you in December.
All right. Thanks.
Have a happy Thanksgiving.
You too.
Okay. Very good. This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. I'm Celeste Quinn and Jack Brighton, our Director of Internet Services. How appropriate to have you here this afternoon with us in the studio. He's with us this afternoon as we try to make new friends and we try to raise some money this week here on AM 580.
That's right. We're looking for new friends of WILL to make a pledge call to 217-244-9455. What does it mean to become a new friend? Do you have to join some kind of group meeting or attend committee hearings or anything? No, you do not have to do that. All you have to do is make an annual contribution. If it would be your first contribution, maybe you want to start at a $40 basic membership level to this station by calling 217-244-9455. You know, when I go to the coffee shop, when they hand me like, you know, 12 cents or whatever change, I just drop it in that cup, you know, next to the cash register. A $40 membership pledge is 11 cents a day. So think of it like spare change. You know, that's, I guess we have our tin cup out asking for spare change. But it really means a lot because every little bit goes toward the aggregate, that is, the money that supports this service. 47% of our budget comes from those kinds of pledges. So it does make a difference. Every individual counts, and that's you. So we're asking you to go to your telephone, pick it up, and dial 217-244-9455.
Or if you're listening online this afternoon, join us online.
That's right. WILL.UIUC.edu. Make a pledge online with your credit card. The pledge link on the top of every web page on our site takes you there very easily and quickly.
And if we enroll, this is an amazing fact, if we enroll 500 new friends of WILL, which is one of our goals this week, even at the basic membership level of $40, that would mean $20,000 for WILL.
Absolutely. Well, it takes small contributions by a lot of different people. I mean, that's how we do it. You know, you might think, well, our budget overall, I mean, we're hoping to raise $140,000 this week. So what's a $40 pledge? You know, it may seem like a drop in the bucket, but the fact is it's all the drops in that bucket that fills it up. And that's what we need to do is get each individual. We know that 9 out of 10 listeners don't contribute to the station. If we could make it only 8 out of 10. You know, get 2 out of 10 contributing to the station. If you've never contributed before, please consider that you could be the next one who makes that difference by making your pledge right now.
Yeah. Let's check quickly with Maeve O'Reilly in Pledge Central. We've got a goal today where Jack mentioned the goal for the week of $140,000 and our goal today, $90,000. And I know last time we talked with you, Maeve, you were expecting to have an update soon.
That's right. And I do. And it's $84,455, which is great. And we're just about $5,000 short, a little over $5,000 short of meeting that goal of $90,000 for today.
We'd love to make that goal, and we'd love to hear from you at 217-244-9455. If you listen to the Afternoon Magazine and you tune in on the third Thursday of the month to talk with Greg Klein about computers, if we've helped you out, well, help us out now. 217-244-9455. That's 244-WILL, or online at WILL.UIUC.edu. And to everyone who has joined us, thank you very much. 9 minutes before 2 o'clock, settlement prices should be in from the Chicago Board of Trade. Here's Todd Gleason.
Thanks much, Celeste. From the Chicago Board of Trade this afternoon, futures at the board fell apart late in the day after hustling up just a bit in both the corn and the bean pits to some higher levels, up 2 to 3 in the corn, I believe, and about a nickel in the beans. They managed to finish just about that much lower at the end of the day, falling apart. Let's start with the December wheat contract for the day. A high of 314 and a half, a low at 309. The settlement price there, 311 and three quarters. They were off 1 3/4 today. March futures were down 3 cents with a high of 325 and a half, a low at 319 and three quarters. Settlement price once again at 322 in the March wheat. May futures now, 330 the high, the low at 324 and a half. Settlement price 326 and three quarters, down 3. And the July contract settled 2.5 cents lower at 332 and a half high, low at 327 and a half. They settled 329 and three quarters. They were off 2.5 cents for the day. September contract at 337 high, low at 336, settled 336 and a half, down 1.5. December corn now, 208 and three quarters the high for the day, the low at 204. Had a 4 3/4 cent trading range, settled a quarter above the low at 204 and a quarter. Down 1 3/4 for the day. The March futures are 218 and a quarter high, low at 214 and three quarters. Settlement price there, 215. They were off a penny and a half. May contract down 1 with a high of 225 and a quarter, a low at 222, and the settlement price at 222 and a quarter. And July futures at 231 and a quarter high, low at 228 and a quarter, settled at $2.28 and a half cents. They were down a penny for the day. September futures, 237 and three quarters the high, the low at 235. A settlement price on that low at 235, down 0.75 cents. And next year's December, the new crop at 246 high, low at 244, pretty narrow trading range of 2 cents, settled at 244 and a quarter. They were off a half at the end of the day. December oats now, 148 and a quarter the high, the low at 139, settled 140 and a half, off 5.5 cents for the day. The March futures were off 5 3/4 with the settlement price of 147 and a half. And the March oats had a high of 155 at a low at 147. From the soy complex now, with nearby soybeans, 537 and one quarter the high, the low at 527. Settlement price there at 528. They were down 4.5 cents at the end of the day. January futures, 539 and a half the high, the low at 529 and three quarters. Settled at 531, down 3 3/4. The March contract at 544 high, low at 535. Settled 536, they were up 2 3/4, and the May soybeans, 549 and a half, the high, the low at 540 and a half. Settlement price from for those May soybeans at 541 and 3/4, off 2.5 cents. By the way, we'll talk with the folks at AgriVisor this afternoon. Nobody better to talk to about the technical side of this market, which was driving a lot of the trade for the day at the board and on the floor there in Chicago. Soybeans July contract on LaSalle Street, 555 the high, the low at 546 and a half. A settlement price at 547 and three quarters. They were down 1 3/4. And the August at 553 and a half high, low at 548 and a half. Settlement price at 548 and three quarters. They were down a penny and a quarter. From the bean meal complex, 160.50 the high for the December, the low at 157.80, settled 158.50. And that settlement price was up a dime. January bean meal, 161.40 the high, the low at 159, settled 159.70, off a dime for the day. December bean oil, $20.83 a pound the high, the low at 20.36, settled at 20.40, down 23. And the January contract off 21 cents, a $20.88 high, low at 20.53, and a settlement price for the January bean oil at 20.55. Once again, they were off 21 for the day. Now here's Celeste Quinn with the settlement prices from the Mercantile Exchange.
Thank you, Todd. A lower day today for feeder cattle. Lean hogs finished higher, as did February pork bellies. October feeder cattle, 112.25 the high, 111.90 the low, the settlement 111.92.5, that down 32.5. November, 110.95 the high, 109.90 the low, 109.95 the settlement, that down 65. January, 108.40 the high, 107.50 the low, 107.50 the settlement, that down 70. October live cattle, 87 even the high, 86.45 the low, 86.70 the final price, that up 20. December live cattle unchanged today, the high 87.55, the low 86.85, the settlement 87 even again, that unchanged. December lean hog 67.35, the high 66.30, the low 67.15, the settlement, that up 125. February 67.45, the high 66.30, the low 67.37.5, the settlement, that up 137.5. April, 65.15, the high, 64.40, the low, 65.05, the settlement, that finished up 87.5. May lean hog, 65.82.5, the high, 65, even the low, the settlement, 65.77.5, that up 82.5. And February bellies were up $1.62.5 today, the high 94.70, the low 93.25, the settlement 94.42.5, again that up 162.5. And let's take a look at the Dow now is down 17 points at 98.70. The NASDAQ up 18 at 1951. And the S&P 500 up 2 points at 1106.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from these business partners: Swires Land and Management Company, Danville; Michael W. Walker Consulting, Urbana; and Wind, Water, and Light in Mahomet. These business partners join the friends of WILL in making great programs possible. Thank you.
It's time once again to Ask Dr. Science. So let's ask Dr. Science.
That's me.
Remember, he knows more than you do.
That's right.
Matthew C. Bone from Milan, Ohio, wants to know, Dear Dr. Science, what exactly is that clear jelly around Spam?
When Spam reaches a certain phase of development, it sheds its old skin and grows a new one. This roughly corresponds to the human phase we call adolescence. Older Spam sometimes suffers from hair loss and wrinkling. This is not to denigrate the integrity or value of the Spam in question. I mean, many people prefer bald, wrinkled Spam, saying it has more character. You should always discard the clear jelly before using Spam, although I've found that if you set it aside and wash it with sodium hydroxide, it makes a dandy floor cleaner. I tried it on my car, but the next morning I found every cat in the neighborhood licking it. And before the day was done, I had to get a new paint job. Thanks, Earl Schweib.
Thank you, Dr. Science. Send your science questions to Ask Dr. Science. Remember, he's not a real doctor.
I have a master's degree
in science.
You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL Urbana, the broadcasting service of the College of Communications at the University of Illinois, on the AM radio dial at 580 and on the World Wide Web at WILL.UIUC.edu. I'm Celeste Quinn. Jason Croft is our